So Tim and Todd are missionaries flying into the Amazon jungle. And as they're flying, Tim, with his wonderful sense of humor, tells a hilarious joke. And Todd is having this big belly laugh, and he's laughing so hard he's shaking this passenger seat, and he happens to rattle the brittle fuel lines, and they break. And gas comes pouring down all over him, aviation fuel. And Tim looks over at Todd, and Todd looks at Tim, and they look down at the jungle, and there's trees, many, many trees, and a little bit of little patch of grass up on the hill, not far away. And Tim angles the dying plane toward the grassy spot, and they crash land. And both survive the crash landing, and Todd says, "Well, what a fine fix you've got us into this time." And Tim says, "Okay, give me a little bit." Todd says, "I'm not going to wait on you. I came along with you in this rattletrap plane, and it, you know, you got us into this." And he grabs his machete and he takes off through the jungle. Whack, 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 chopping. And Tim stops for a little bit and he gets his machete out and he lays it down on the ground and he climbs a tree. Todd looks back. Fruit looked and climbing the tree. Keeps on, takes off, keeps going. Tim climbs up to the very top of this tree, and he looks out across the jungle, and he can see that there's a valley off in the distance. And he knows that where there's a valley, there's a river. And he knows that where there's a river, if you follow a river, you will eventually come to civilization. And so Tim comes down, and he keeps direction in his mind, and he takes his machete and begins chopping. And he comes to a spot that is very, very thick, but he chops right through it. Todd, on the other hand, when he comes to a spot that is thick in the jungle and looks dangerous and full of anacondas and whatever other creatures that might swallow him whole, he just goes around it. Todd finally gets to the river and he follows the river. And as he's going, his arms are getting tired and he begins to change his technique. And now, as he's chopping, he chops down and then he brings his blade up. So he's cutting both ways. Tim's route from the crash site looks something like this. Comes down along the river and it follows the river down to a city. And Todd, because he is blindly happy through the jungle and going around all the tough spots, his path looks something like this. And lo and behold, he ends up back at the airport. A week later, Tim returns to the crash site with the rescue team, and they find Todd sitting up against a tree with a broken machete. The difference between the two was organization. We're going to use that story. It's our model of how to manage a multi-grade classroom. I don't want you to think that I'm pretending that, or that I imagine that a classroom is a plane wreck. There are times that you may feel as though you have crash landed, and this is what you're left with. You might have heard the saying that success is 1%, inspiration and 99% perspiration, but that does not need to be true. While success is a lot of work, the formula could be 1% inspiration, 29% perspiration, and 70% organization. Organization reduces stress and increases success. How many of you want to succeed? How many of you want to decrease your stress level? King David desired to build God a temple, but God passed the job on to Solomon. Rather than rest and enjoy his retirement, David began to organize. He had direction. Remember when Tim climbed that tree? The reason he climbed the tree was because he knew. He needed direction. The best efforts, if they are misdirected, will not get you where you want to go. David had direction. Solomon then began his reign by continuing to organize. He used methods. And his methods were not all the same methods that his father had used. And I want you to know that through this topic, I do not want to present only one way of doing things. I want you to understand that while we agree, we typically agree on endpoints, we disagree on methods, and that's fine. Some methods will work for Dennis and they won't work for me. It's because we're two different people. God made us different. That's okay. The Bible does not condemn Solomon for using different methods. That was fine. When the workmen began to build, the work was done in silence as a result of systematic organization. That we are going to call technique. Just like Solomon's temple, our classrooms can be focused, industrious, and yet quiet if we are willing to organize. So if you want to succeed in life, get organized, develop systems, and with God's help, you can succeed. Our takeaway for today is a direct quote from Uwe Steinmann, a very good friend of mine who currently lives on the other side of the Amazon jungle. It is. His words were, have a plan, work your plan, and hope your plan works. I changed that slightly to have a system, work your system, and hope your system works. Systematic direction. If you don't know where you're going, you for sure aren't going to get there. Right? Something to be aware of is that, can you tell me which way to draw a line away from that dot? What direction is away from that dot?
Always up.
Always up! I like that. Very good. When Hagar was running away from Sarah and the angel stopped her and said, Hagar, where are you going? Where are you going? She said, away from Sarah. That's not a direction. Away from any point. Reactionary decision making is not a direction. So if you had a bad experience last year, do not respond by running this year. That's not a direction. If the school that you are going to be teaching in had a bad experience last year and you've heard all about it, and you're determined that you're not going to make the same mistakes last year's teacher did, that is not a direction. Right? Eternal vision. Churches have a vision for themselves. Parents have a vision for their children. Board members have a vision for their school. And ministerial teams have a vision for the growth they want to see in their congregations. You need to find out what that vision is in the school, the community you're going to be teaching in. I overheard a conversation last night where someone said they're not sure about how to fix a respect problem in a certain community. The board wants the school to fix it, but they think it's the preacher's problem. And the preachers think it's the parents' problem, and they're probably all right. But at least somebody has a vision, and they're working. You need an eternal vision for yourself. One of the ministers in the church I grew up in called it the far look. Pray for direction. I would like for you to look ahead into your own classroom this year. If you would close your eyes for a few moments. And I want you to visualize success. There's something special about picturing yourself at the end of this coming school term with students who have grown in their character, in their knowledge, and in favor with God and man. You can open your eyes again. To make that happen, you're going to have to be a weatherman. What I mean by that is that we don't play outside during a thunderstorm, right? Because we know that what the weather's doing. If your church or whatever is having a week of meetings, think about how that's going to affect your students. Look ahead to, and for those of you who get to know your students very, very well, and I hope all of you do, as that happens, try to predict where they're going to stumble and fall, whether it's events at school that might cause them to become overstimulated and lose control of themselves, or whether it's lessons that they may struggle with. I already told you that if you don't know where you're going, you for sure won't get there. Write some goals down for yourself, for this year. There's something special about having a plan. one of my students wrote herself a 5-year plan. She got 4 years into it before she started dating. But had she not had a plan, her life might have been kind of a tod blob until then. But she had direction. She was going somewhere. She did some wonderful things during that period of time. And an eternal vision for your students. In our students, we want long-term progress. In what areas? Discipline. Every student needs to grow in self-discipline this year. In motivation, that might be part of discipline, but it's maybe a little bit different. Someone can be well-behaved and not get much work done. And in manners. I am appalled sometimes when I see what we consider okay behavior at the lunch table or on the playground. It's just good manners. And in relating to your students, be focused on the big rocks. This kind of goes along with what I already said, but training before teaching. It is more important for you to spend time on your children's character than it is on their knowledge. Teaching before correcting. It's more important for you to teach than it is to check every single problem that your students do. And your class before your classroom. It's far more important that your children know that you love and care about them than that your classroom is decorated to match the season and the holiday perfectly. All right. I'm trying to get to the practical stuff, so bear with me. We'll get there. Systematic dedication. In the story about Tim and Todd, when Todd came to a tough spot, he went around it. He did not face battles when they confronted him. Tim knew that if he wanted to follow the river, that was going to mean chopping through some tough things, probably climbing some rough rocks. There's a saying among generals that battles are won before they are fought. The concept being that people who have decided this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to push through until we get there, are the ones who get there. In the Battle of the Bulge, the 101st Airborne Division was completely surrounded in the little town of Bastion, Belgium. German army had them completely surrounded. And they sent an ambassador to the commander of the 101st Airborne and said, "You may surrender. We will not treat you badly or anything. We just need you guys out of the way so that we can use this intersection that you're guarding because you're really slowing us down." And the commander's response was one word: nuts. He wasn't going to give up just because it was going to be tough. They were out of food, out of medicine. People were freezing to death. And his men were dying by the hundreds. And they never did give up. At the exact same time as that was happening, General Patton and his third army, who had been stationed on the edge of Germany, ready to charge into Germany and take the battle onto German soil, was told he's got to go save the 101st Airborne first. And they marched, some of them 36 hours, and fought and against people with bigger guns and so on. And they won. Because they had decided ahead of time, this was a battle we're going to fight. We're not going to go around it. Be disciplined. Choose to wade through the tough spots. Choose to follow the river. And that river might, once again, the method you use might be a little different. Make sure it fits you. Be tidy. We'll give a little bit more about that later. Be punctual. Budget your class times, especially if you have a pet subject that you really, really enjoy. Be careful not to spend 3 hours a day on science. Okay. I'm sure some of us would just love to do that. Be principled. This is the hardest part of teaching and of managing a classroom. If you want your students to be orderly, you have to be more orderly than you want them to be. That is a fact. And it's not fun. And it's not easy. But it is a reality. Be professional. What I mean by this is do things like a professional business person does. Write lists for yourself. I love lists. And if you do something that's not on your list, write it on your list and cross it off to see, show that you got it. Okay. Time. I don't know how much time you're expecting to spend at school this year, but be realistic. Spend enough time there to feel like you're doing a good job and you're putting your effort in that you ought to, but don't live there. I typically spend about 10 hours a day at school. I actually have school hours. My wife knows when I'm leaving in the morning, and she knows when I'm getting home in the evening. Some of you who are single, you might think it's okay if I have an erratic schedule. If I want to stay up to 1 o'clock in the morning one night and go to bed early the next night, that's not going to affect my teaching. You're fooling yourself. It's not true. Okay. In your speech. What I mean by this is actually we kind of go along with what you think about. Keep school at school and home at home. That's being professional. If you face an issue at school and you deal with it at school, when you leave the schoolhouse, leave that issue at school. If you see that one of your children outside of the school, don't treat them as though they're still in trouble, even if they are still in trouble at school. Right? Let them know that when they leave the schoolhouse, that's different. And professional people have interests aside from their profession. All right. During my first year of teaching, I was at school from 6 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the evening, 6 days a week. Now, I'm a very slow reader. I've gotten a little bit better since then. I was behind most of my students. I had 15 students in 5 grades, and 5 of them were slow students. And I thought I was dying. When I attended a CMTI meeting, and this venerable man gets up and says, "Yes, I've taught for a while. I forget how long exactly, and I have 22 students and however many grades and whatever." And my mouth was, down there somewhere close to the tops of my shoes. As soon as he got done talking, I rushed up to him. "How do you do it? I mean, you don't even have bags under your eyes." And you look like you're relaxed. You're not quivering and everything. And it's very benevolent to me. And he asked how things were going. And I told him. And he said, "Have you ever gone hunting?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You go home and buy yourself a hunting license." "Hunting? I live at school. I don't have time to go hunting. What are you thinking? These children will die if I don't get everything done right, and I will die too." And he said, "No, you need to go hunting." "Really?" "Yes, go hunting." So I did. I went home and I bought a hunting license, and I went to school at 6 o'clock in the morning, like usual, and started the stoves in all the rooms, which was one of my responsibilities. And then I left and went hunting. And I shot a nice big 8-point buck. And one of my students helped dress it. And we hung it in his dad's dairy barn. And I rushed off to school with still a little bit of deer smell lingering on me. And so I called my mother and said, "I don't have time to shower. Can you at least please send my cologne or whatever along to try to cover this stuff up?" And by the time the school day started, all the boys knew that I had shot this nice big buck this morning. And my girls had way more questions than normal that day. I couldn't figure this out until after school. One of them said, "You smelled so nice today." I don't know what it was like the other days. But can you believe that my school year went better after that? Respect went through the roof. And it was all because I shot a buck. And I smelled horrible until I got it covered up with some good stuff. It didn't take care of all the problems, but suddenly I realized that to be a rounded out individual in my classroom, I needed recreation. I know you ladies are living on teachers' wages. So when I tell you to go shopping, you might have to hit the thrift stores. I don't know if that's a burden to any of you or not, but do that. Do your happy thing. If it's fishing, if it's hiking, skydiving, whatever it is that gets you recharged, that is actually part of being dedicated, is realizing that a person with an obsessive focus is going to lose that focus. God did not make us to have only one interest in life. All right, here's where you get to talk lots. Systematic techniques. These are the practical things. How are we going to do this? Storage. I'm going to give you a few principles, and then I would like just a little bit of input from you all. You've heard the saying, a place for everything and everything in its place. I would say when you place things, arrange them according to some type of association. For example, art supplies should be in one place and science supplies in a different one. I actually have different spots for them in our storage room. It needs some cleaning at the moment, but typically I have it arranged neatly enough that I can send a student to the storage room and tell them where to grab something, and they will go there and it will be there. Color coding. This is something that I learned while working in a hospital lab. We color coded almost everything, and it is amazing. For subjects that are written in tablets, our school supplies the tablets and they're different colors. And I can know if I'm grabbing a red tablet that it's a math tablet. And all it has to have is the student's name on it. And the students know if they're grabbing that tablet, that's the right one. And it helps keep from things being done in the wrong place and so on. We only have so much space in every schoolroom. This one only has so much storage room in it. Put things that you use every day very close to you. Put things that you use once a week or so a little farther away. And if it's something that you only use several times a school term, leave it in the storage building. This is an actual skill that once I started doing it made having classes and so on at the class table so much faster. I would keep my measuring cups and so on close to my class table. And they were right there. When I wanted to teach someone about measures, I didn't have to go running into the kitchen to go grab the stuff I needed. It was handy. Any other ideas about storage systems? How do you do things? Yes, Everett.
This isn't something I've done, but I've been listening to someone who's teaching about this, and she said, organize things so that they're easy to put away. Because
absolutely.
Often, for myself, I've made it easy to get. And then you take too much time to put away, so you just plop it on your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And the day your desk is a wreck,
and mm-hmm.
you want to just cry.
Yes. So, along with organizing them easy to, where you can retrieve them easily, also make them easy to put away. And sometimes that means spending a little extra time to make it that way. Some of my storage in my classroom I actually built. But it was worth my time. Because the things are easy to put away and easy to get as well. Any other comments before we go on to something else I would like to? I have quite a few different things here.
Mm-hmm. Talking from one of my siblings' experiences, and they had a teacher once that was not organized, and it just bothered them.
Yes.
So much.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever that's worth.
Yes. No, they do care. This actually comes into something else that I hope to get to after a while, but I have a student in the classroom who is allowed to get into my desk, and it's a pleasure to me to be able, if they come to me and say, where's the tape? I can see it's in the top right-hand drawer in the third compartment, and it's there. And after a while, that student will get to where they know where everything is in that desk, and they can tell anybody else, and so on. They do care about everything. Yes, Everett?
So a question on that. How do you choose that student, and they don't just go looking through?
We'll get there in a minute here. I'm sorry, I'm standing ahead of myself, but it did sort of go along with what you said, so forgive me if you don't mind for saying, wait a minute. Systematic classes. And what I mean by this is that for those of you teaching, several of you said you're teaching the whole school, or if you're teaching even two grades, when it gets up to 3 to 5, it gets much more difficult. You are not going to have time to have a nice class with each group of students. That's not realistic. It won't happen every day. You're going to have a system of making sure that the people who need a class get a class, and to make sure that review is happening. One of the things I do to save time on review is what I call collective review. Students come in from recess, and or we get done with devotions in the morning, and before anybody does anything, I say, how many ounces in a pound?
16.
Pounds in a ton? Long ton? Very good. How many inches in a foot?
12.
In a yard?
36.
How many feet are in a yard?
3.
In a mile?
5,280.
Okay, everybody's getting it all at one time. Keeps going. Same thing with English. What is a noun? Very good. What are two kinds of nouns?
Abstract.
Okay, give me an example of an abstract noun. Anybody?
Hello.
Good. Did you feel like you were bought in and were learning something, were reviewing, but instead of having to do that with every grade as they come up to the class table, everybody gets it all at one time, and then when I come up to class, all I'm doing is firing the new stuff at them. Right? That's a time-saving technique for classes. Have a system for how you check things, whether you're checking in class, whether you check all the books afterwards. If you are using CLE and you're just scanning what they've checked, have a system of doing that. Have a system of teaching. And with this, I will tell you that the most time-saving technique you can use in your classroom is teach it right the first time. Because if you don't have right time to teach it right the first time, you for sure aren't going to have the time to unteach what you taught and reteach it the right way for the next 3 days. I think there might be a person or two here who has experienced that as well. Have procedures for things that happen during class time. For example, what do you expect your students to do when they're at the board? How are they supposed to read when they're reading a reading lesson? Do you read by sentences, by paragraphs? Is it random? Is there an order to it? Doesn't really matter what your system is, but have a system. Master minimums. Dig for the nugget in the lesson that the students have to know and give it to them. Tell them, all you have to know today is that noun's name. They love knowing that we have to do. For those teaching lower grades or any grade where there's timed work, if at all possible, time them all at the same time rather than starting a timer multiple times in a row. That saves time for you. And then something that I started doing when I was teaching our whole school was having overlapping classes. And this it's going to be easier for me to demonstrate to you than it is for me to tell you what I mean. But particularly math and English, you can actually effectively have more than one class at the class table at a time. So, ladies who sat over here, I'm sorry, you get to get picked on. So I'm going to have you pretend to be a third grader. You may go ahead and begin working on those fraction problems right beside you. Yes. And just be aware they're just a little harder than yesterday's, but it's the same process. Just change them to this light fractions and add. And I'm going to have you go ahead and start working. We'll pretend you're a fourth grader, and you get to work on these fractions. Just remember to carry when necessary. So you may go ahead and begin working on those. And fifth grade, we're going to have you go ahead and start multiplying. And remember to cancel whenever you can. So you may go ahead and grab a marker and begin working. Now, sixth grade, this is quite a bit harder. all right? Dividing fractions involves inverting the number on the right. You may all stop, all right? But did you see what was going on? Did each of you feel engaged and like you at least sort of knew what to do next? Basically, you were stuck. All right, I lost them, that does happen. But students who are used to doing this, and if you'll notice, I use color coding. My students will walk into my classroom in the morning and say, ours are the blue ones. They already know what to do. And they're looking at those thinking, oh yeah, I can do that. And by the time they get up to the class table, they're raring to go, half of my work is already done. It can be done. You can do this. You can do it with English by having some sentences on the board, maybe with different difficulty levels for them to find nouns, verbs, whatever, in, and so on. It is possible. It does take a lot of practice and so on, but it can be done. All right. Any systems that you use for teaching classes? Yes, Everett.
One thing I'll do is have them have two be in one, explaining one class, and have the next come up and do the checking.
Sure.
Or have an answer key, like just a list of answers for them.
Yes.
I'll see the book and work at that and work it through like mm-hmm. that.
So having one of them checking while you're teaching the next class.
Well, one of my rules is they have to have the lesson ready before they come up. It depends on your curriculum.
That
some
sounds.
Have two paragraphs and some have 22 paragraphs.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes a big difference.
And you have to be realistic in what you're expecting from them. There again, if you have a system and they know what your system is and you stick to it, it usually will end up working for you. And by the way, sorry for calling you Everett. You're Ernest. Very good. Anyone else? Yes, Dan.
Every now and then, 7th and 8th grade, they're in separate math books, but they're kind of studying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
In 7th grade, it's pretty impressed. They can do 8th grade work.
Yes.
And every now and then, you make that work. You got to watch. You don't miss something. But.
Yes. It actually happens in some of the middle grades as well, particularly in fractions and measures. Quite often, they're hitting close to the same thing, and the biggest difference is just difficulty level. And if the concept's the same, bring them up, teach the concept together, and then, especially if you use color-coded practice problems on the board, just tell them, you know, 5th grade, these are yours, 6th grade, those are yours. And you can go on and start teaching 7th grade while they're practicing. It's wonderful. Anyone else? Yes?
I will say, I use a chalkboard, not a whiteboard,
mm-hmm.
but color chalk absolutely makes a difference.
It does. Yes. Yeah, the whole color coding thing is something I feel like we underuse. We could do a lot more of it in most of our classrooms. And I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying you could.
So in language class, you go up and you write out the sentences. That takes as long as, like in my experience, there's a whole, if you write the sentences they give, that the book gives me to put on the board,
mm-hmm.
I spend more time writing than teaching the class.
And so I don't do that all the time. One of the things that I will do in language class, is, because that's time consuming, is tell them to come up to the board, copy the sentences, do the work, and I'll actually have the answers to the ones I want them to practice on the class table. And they can just turn around and look at them as they're working. And it's amazing how much they learn by actually getting to see the right, this was the right thing I was supposed to do. I'm not talking, but they're still learning, which is the point. And I'm already talking with the other next grade. And if they hit something that they don't understand, they'll stop me and say, hey, you know, we don't agree with this, whatever. That's great. But I do, at times, do the writing on the board. I typically will not use what's in the book, just because it's more fun. I'll write a Tim and Todd story on the board, and they get to diagram all the sentences, and it's a blast, that type of thing. So, but there again, I have to do it when I've got time. Often I will do it in the period before I'm going to teach it. So at the end of the period before I'm going to teach language class, I'll be answering questions and writing on the board at the same time. And distracting my students. Yeah. Anyone else? We should keep moving here. thank you for sharing. And I hope you are able to use some of this. Systematic lesson approach. And this is for the students. You should give them a system of how you want them to attack their work. It does make a difference. If you have students writing in a tablet, have a way that you want them to present their lesson. I spend quite a bit of time on this the first 2 weeks of school. Where I want their name. I insist that my students copy the assignment that I wrote on the board so that I know they knew what they were supposed to do. They can't say, oh, we didn't know we were supposed to only do the even numbers. Right there. I told you. So on. And I have my students, as much as possible, do their lesson the way it is in the textbook. It makes checking so much easier. As far as a method of attacking a lesson, I teach the three-pass method. Is anyone here familiar with that method? Furnace? Anyone else? A few people? The three-pass method is very simple. A student goes through the lesson as literally as fast as they can, answering every question they can answer without having to think more than just a few seconds. The ones that they can't answer, they put a star beside. But they go through and do all the, quote, easy questions. That's the first pass. The second pass is they go back to those harder questions and try them again. Those ones that they placed a star beside. And quite often they can get a few of those by studying the text a little more, or maybe one of the easy problems actually helped them understand the hard one. And the very last pass, their third pass, is with assistance from the teacher, or in my classroom I have sometimes an older student will help some of the younger ones. But someone's going to help them with that last pass. The beauty of that is that the children only ask a question one time per subject, per lesson. So rather than Arthur coming up and, I don't know how to do number five. Okay, we help him do number five. And 3 minutes later, I don't know how to do number 12. And we're killing time every time that happens. If he does everything else, and I go to his desk and we answer, or he comes to my desk, however you do it, but we answered the ones that he didn't know all at one time, it saves time. It really does. And teach your students time management. Teach them to do the lesson that is due first. Teach them to work while they wait. That sitting here with like this is not acceptable. Right? If you use a hand raised method, make sure they raise the hand that they don't write with. And so on. And that if they complete a subject as much as they can, they go on to the next subject. But sitting there doing nothing is not acceptable. That's a system that needs to be in place in your classroom. Any other systems for how your students attack their work?
One thing my dad did, he is the upper grade classroom, so he had multiple grades, and I think he implemented early on and kept going was having flags. Usually you could just snap them on sometimes, you had to drill them in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a question, put it up, and hopefully you'd see it.
Yes.
Before too long.
Yes. So Jordan's jumping ahead of me, which is great, because my very next thing was a system for your students asking a question. And the flag system, I use that as well. It's great because the students put the flag in a certain position that tells you that they have a question and they have both hands to keep working. And they're supposed to keep working until someone helps them. I've heard of teachers who used a little piece of paper that was folded into a triangle. They would rotate. A certain position meant they needed to leave the room. One of them meant, I have a question. And one meant, I'm perfectly happy, leave me alone. I know a lot of teachers use a finger method. One finger means one thing, and so on. If you do that, just make sure that they're using the hand they do it right with. They should never have an excuse to sit at their desk doing nothing. Because if you give it to them, they will. Any other thoughts about students asking questions, how you manage that? Yes. I'm sorry. We'll get you next.
On something difficult, I found it helps to have, like, if you have a class table that you're not using, mm-hmm. that will grade you back there, and they can work on it together. And
absolutely.
Sometimes they can get a lot of them figured out on their own.
Yes.
Like, specifically, Apologia Science, I had some students that struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
If they would all go back there, they could figure most of them out on their own, and then I could go help all of them figure out whichever ones they struggled with.
Okay, so basically what you're talking about is group studies.
Yeah.
And I would just state here that text-based subjects, reading, Bible, science, and history, lend themselves toward group studies. And often those can be very effective if you're teaching upper grades. I actually do that with those subjects anymore. Go ahead.
Two questions. Do you let students go out in groups? And do you, when a student has a question and you know they're probably going to all have questions, do you tell them to listen?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, if you know, Arthur's got a question on number 12 and I get to it and...
You can tell.
And everybody else, you see everyone else.
Yeah.
Just say, okay, listen up, guys.
Yeah.
Here's what you need to do. And so on. Your question about groups going out, was that relating to studying? Or?
Yeah, like Bible reading, those kinds of subjects.
I said no. The answer actually is yes, but they're literally right outside my door where they're still supervised. Mm-hmm. I trust my students, but I don't want to tempt them. I would really like to answer one or two more questions very quickly. Does anybody else have anything you wanted to say there? Yes?
Nathan? So, back to that question of a couple students having the same question. So, is there any tips on how to do that? Because I want them to listen if somebody else in their grade asks the question because they might have the same one. At the same time, sometimes they're like, well, I was engrossed in my lesson. Or
mm-hmm.
I didn't hear when they asked the question.
Yeah.
So, what's the balance in that?
That, I would say, comes, the responsibility is yours to make sure that you have their attention. And some of this comes actually with teaching more than 1 year. There are problems in the math curriculum that I use that I know the students are going to struggle with. And when one of them has a question about it, I'll just say, hey, okay, sixth grade, this is a problem. But here's what you do. It is teaching you something valuable. And so I would actually say the grades, or maybe even say their name, listen up, so on. So I'm not going to get to cover everything. I have to cover what I want to here. One of the things wonderful leaders do is delegate. They don't try to do everything. So I mentioned this just a little bit. You need a system for giving people responsibility. For example, in my classroom, the girls take turns heating up food for lunch. That way I don't have four different girls running out there because they have to put their sandwich in the microwave. And they wanted to have it. And when we dismiss for lunchtime, everybody's food's hot. We go out there, eat, and we're ready to go. And I have students responsible to set up for recess. They are, Everett talked about having things where you can get them and put them away. They're responsible to make sure our recess equipment, the balls, the bats, spaces, and everything is well cared for, and that, if we're going to play softball, they get out there and get that stuff ready to go. When everyone else gets out the door, we're ready to start a game, and so on. I have my boys help with song leading, occasionally with maybe a devotional or something. And I do have students help me answer questions. Particularly if you're teaching an entire school, having a seventh or eighth grader help a first grader so that first grader stays engaged is really actually more fair to the seventh and eighth grader because that means when you get to their grade, you're going to have time for their classes. So be discreet. You do have to know your students to be able to do this effectively. I wouldn't have brothers and sisters help each other typically. You can guess why that might not be. Anyway. But it does work, and it can be fair, and it can help you save time. In closing, have a system, work your system, and hope your system works. Organization reduces stress and increases your chances of success. So with God's help, organize.